Where do you draw the line between freedom of speech and allowing inflammatory language or fake news to go unchecked? In the past, that would have been decisions for newspapers and broadcasters, even courts. Now, in our highly polarised age, it's often up to hugely powerful individuals who run social media. After facing massive criticism over fake news pushed by Russia in the 2016 US election, Facebook is announcing new safeguards, which it says will prevent foreign interference in this year's vote in November. Well, we can talk now to Sir Nick Clegg, Vice President Global Affairs and Communications at Facebook, and of course, former Deputy Prime Minister here. Good morning.
Morning. Morning.
And before we go on to the individual measures, which I know you'll want to talk about, let's go back to the 2016 election, because in a way this is how it all started. Do you accept that Facebook got it wrong then?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody, in a sense, got it wrong, because no one was aware at the time what the sort of level and sophistication of the Russian interference would be. I think at the time, many people were looking out for more traditional forms of nefarious behaviour, like hacking, you know, hacking of accounts and so on. And it was the first time that foreign organised adversaries were trying through social media platforms like Facebook to interfere with the election, and they did it, of course. I think the evidence is that they only ran about $100,000 worth of ads, which compares to what, over $80 million worth of advertisements run by Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump at the time. So it was a small amount, but it was designed to create sort of disturbance and division in what was already a highly polarised election.
And do you think that Mark Zuckerberg himself was too dismissive? Because he said at the time the idea that fake news influenced the election in any way is a pretty crazy idea.
Yeah, I think he himself has said that he regrets saying that, and he accepts that a lot needs to change to learn from those lessons. And that's, of course, exactly the company now and the way that it operates. Its platform is just a world apart from what it was in 2016. Facebook has employed over 35,000 people to keep its platform safe. It now takes down and identifies, with some of the most sophisticated technology in the industry, how these sort of fake networks operate, these inauthentic networks operate. Took down about 50 of them, I think 11 of them emanating from Russia last year alone, compared to none in 2016 and one in 2017. And of course, there have been 200 elections since then. And so each time the company has been able, and in the year and a half I've been at Facebook, I've seen that with each election, we've got better and better at defending the integrity of the democratic process. With each experience, the defences get stronger.
One of the measures you're taking is to ban ads from state-controlled media of other countries. But is that really the problem when it comes to American elections? Or is it the more pernicious form of content, the one that is harder to discover where it's actually coming from?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, we took that measure, we decided that recently, if you like, out of a sort of abundance of caution, to make sure that ads run from Chinese or Russian or other state-controlled media entities could not use those ads to spread misinformation or seek to exploit division. But I think you're right to say that the problem sort of mutates all the time. And I think that one of the biggest things that I've certainly seen in the year and a half I've been working in this company is that the problem of misinformation, the problem of people trying to use fake accounts, we block millions of fake accounts every day. So, I mean, the sheer scale of these, I mean, most of those fake accounts are done on a sort of automated basis for sort of financial fraud. But nonetheless, fake behaviour is generated often these days domestically more than from foreign networks. And that makes it often harder to detect. And that's why we cooperate now much more with other parts of the industry, with Google, with Twitter, and of course with the security agencies as well.
But do those measures go far enough? Because one of the candidates in the election, Joe Biden, has written to Facebook, and he says that he wants you to promote authoritative and trustworthy sources of election rather than the rants of bad actors and conspiracy theorists, and actually wants you to change your decision not to fact check political advertising, especially, he says, within 2 weeks of Election Day.
Yeah, so I mean, on the first point, that is exactly what we're announcing today, which is that we will be launching America's largest voter information and registration effort ever. And we aim to register, or help to register, 4 million US voters. That is twice as much as we managed in the midterm elections in the latter part of 2018, twice as much as we think we helped to register back in 2016.
That may be the case, but what he's talking about is in particular your content and the fact that he wants you to fact-check political advertising, particularly in the run-up to Election Day, which, given, you know, tens of millions of Americans get their news, don't they, from Facebook?
Well, news actually forms a very, very small part of what people digest generally on Facebook. Generally, what people digest on Facebook is stuff about their families and their friends and their holidays and their kids and so on. It's actually a tiny, tiny fraction. I think
you rely on Facebook for their source of news, even if it's a small part of what they, maybe the only news they get, though.
Well, for some people, but for the vast majority of people, that's not actually the case. And the studies have shown again and again and again that actually traditional forms of media tend to drive polarised opinion more than what people consume on their news feed. But setting that aside for a minute, there's a reason why Facebook, and indeed there isn't a single Silicon Valley company that fact-checks political claims and counterclaims and the claims and counterclaims that politicians make about each other, for the very simple reason, and boy do I know this from my close to whatever it was 20 years in politics, is that politicians always make caricatured claims about their own virtues and caricatured claims about the vices of their opponents. So, I don't know, a politician might say, the economy is better because of me, but not a serious economist thinks that's true. Or the NHS will get lashings of extra money from my party without raising taxes. The idea that a private company that in a sense has got no legitimacy to act as an arbiter of political truth, as political opponents slug it out, should intervene and say, no, you can't say this and you can't say that. I think quite rightly people would feel that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook don't have the legitimacy to do that.
Well, let's look at one case where a lot of people thought that you did need to act, and that was the very controversial tweet and Facebook post by President Trump when he said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. When you yourself saw that, did you think that was something that Facebook should take action over?
I thought it was abhorrent. I thought the wording in the post was, it struck me as abhorrent. But here's the thing.
But something that should remain on Facebook, because Twitter took a decision, didn't they? They put up a warning saying that the tweet violated its rules because it glorified violence.
Yeah, that's what they did. So each company does a different thing. I think the fundamental judgment that Facebook took in that instance was that in the end, the best way to hold politicians to account for what they say, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is to make sure that people can hear what they say. Of course, there are limits. There are certain things they can't say. And we, by the way, have removed a number of ads from Donald Trump over the last several months.
But do you think that this particular one, because Twitter believed it glorified violence, do you think this particular post should have remained without any action from Facebook?
Well, that's the decision we took. And the reason was, the decision was taken for the following reason, that if you read the whole post, you will see that it was talking about was Donald Trump saying that he felt that the governor of Minnesota had not taken aggressive enough action at the time when rioting was breaking out in Minneapolis. In other words, he was sort of threatening state action. And of course, like all social media companies, we allow governments to say that they're going to take deploy force if they wish to. But the really big underlying issue is, how do you hold people in politics? Can I just finish? It's tremendously important, this. How do you hold people to account? And in the end, if you don't like what someone says, yes, you can try and censor or silence them, though let's remember that post was repeated and reported infinite times on the BBC and on print and broadcast media anyway. So it's not as if people wouldn't have heard it if we'd taken action against it. But the way to hold people to account is to criticise, mock, attack and pillory what they say, which of course is exactly what's happened over the last couple of weeks since he made that post.
But what I'm finding quite hard to get from you is a sense that you agree with the decision that was made.
I was part of the decision-making process, and it's just like there's almost nothing in my new life in Silicon Valley, which is like my old life in government. But the one bit which is a little similar is that
collective responsibility.
Small bunch of people. And that's as it should be. But reasonable people can reasonably disagree on this particular instance. But I think defending free expression when it is controversial to do so is important, because in the end, the way to hold politicians to account, if you don't like Donald Trump, the best thing, and boy, there are lots of people who don't, is to attack what he says and eventually, of course, campaign and vote against him. And we think our tools allow people to do that in an open and democratic way.
Does that mean, though, that politicians can literally say anything, provided, and this was the test by Mark Zuckerberg, his test was unless there's an imminent risk of harm or danger. That's very hard to prove, isn't it?
It is, but there are two principal categories of content that we take down for politicians. Is one, as you say, if what they say threatens imminent physical harm, and the other one, and so, by the way, that's the reason why, for instance, we took the decision recently to remove a post from President Bolsonaro in Brazil, because we felt he was saying things about completely bogus cures for the coronavirus, which we think, if people had followed his advice, would have damaged their health immediately. But also, if they say things which directly seek to suppress the right for people to exercise their vote, then we get rid of that as well. And indeed, we have done that. Yeah. And as far as the census is concerned, in the case of some ads run by Donald Trump.
Sir Nick Clegg from Facebook, thank you for joining us.